Continuing our look at possible solutions to our housing crisis, HBR reporter Noe Tanigawa shares what's being tried on Maui.
It's so interesting over there, Catherine, because as you and I found out recently, Maui's bigger than you think. They're the second biggest island. They've got 145,000 people in the last census, probably a little more now. Oahu, smaller, and we've got seven times the population. So there's automatically a little bit of perspective for us there. Maui developed so differently, and I gotta mahalo all the people, the real estate agents and other community people who've helped me understand all of this so far, on and off the record, pointing out that, you know, they don't have the big military installations like we do on Oahu. They don't have the manufacturing, no big government operations. So they kind of went from plantation economy to tourism. Blammo, you know. It kind of happened real fast in the 60s and 70s. And so I think it's really good to take a look at that period and see how they were looking at housing. So we got here community activist Lucien Denay. She hosts the Maui Public Access Program Crossroads on Akaku. She kind of points out that affordable housing for resort workers got off to a good start on Maui.
Under the earlier mayors, like Mayor Cravalho, who was the mayor in the 70s, affordable housing for local families was a big priority for him because he was the engineer of the new resort economy, and he knew that the resorts would drive up prices of land. He was a really smart guy. He negotiated with large landowners like, you know, Maui Land and Pine and Alexander and Baldwin and Haleakala Ranch to get land to build affordable units. And then he negotiated with local contractors like Arasumi Brothers. The county just was a broker. They didn't build the housing. Mayor Hannibal Tavares did the same thing.
Ooh, there's mayors getting right in, up to the elbows, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, that it certainly gives you a different perspective than Oahu. It's really interesting.
Yeah, because we on Oahu are really starting to wonder whether we can get the affordable housing we need as a percentage of what people feel like building. You know what I mean? Vince Bagoyo was housing director under Tavares. So he was there when they were building some of that housing. Now, a lot of that workforce housing was only affordable for X number of years, 10 years, 15 years. So some of that housing is now the really expensive stuff in some of the best places. Vince Bagoyo, who was housing director under Tavares, says that Maui has a law. For every four hotel or condo units, you've got to build one affordable workforce unit. And he says, you know, that's worked a lot of the time.
We need to provide affordable housing for our workforce. Otherwise, what's happening on Maui, and I think even it's happening throughout the state, there's this gentrification that's taking place that only the offshore buyer, the well-to-do, that are now enjoying the best places that our local people used to live. The old villages before are now being cut into an agricultural state, and it's being bought by offshore people.
Bagoyo's dad was a plantation worker when he came over. And so, like, think back, Catherine.
Right, the plantations,
where were they? The plantation villages, especially during Obon season, we think about the villages that were right there. Kapalua, Ka'anapali, Lanipoko, Olowalu, Pu'unene, Pa'ia, these, Lahaina, these were the plantation villages. Wow. That was some life, huh?
Right. And it is pretty startling. I mean, I'm still kind of working on that one fact that Maui is bigger than Oahu.
And it's got such a different layout. You know, they finished their Maui Island plan about 8 years ago now. But their idea was to have these kind of plantation, these towns connected by, you know, open land, ag. And there is a possibility for that there, I realize now. What's happening, though, is that those villages, the various towns that are being connected, are by de facto kind of turning into large agricultural estates bought by offshore people. Like, how did that happen? One good example is the Spencers. It's Jesse and Doug Spencer. They had a track record for development on Maui. They were real estate people and developers. They planned something called the Ohana Kai Development, an 1,100-unit affordable home subdivision that was supposed to go in around Ma'alaya. They met with opposition. Things happened back and forth. They bought the property in 2008. They say they spent about $4 million on development and the planning and everything. Finally, with it all came down to 2016, they gave it up. They decided the cheapest, easiest, most sensible thing for them to do would be to divide that land into 21 ag lots and sell it that way. That's what's happening now. That was tough, and it was a tough fight for all of Maui because, Maui Tomorrow, for example, the Ma'alaya Community Association, they were so concerned about traffic and the injection wells that were proposed there. They said could really damage the offshore sea life. The Spencers said that, it's all these first-generation transplants from the mainland who are not committed to local people and affordable housing are just standing in the way. It was rough, really rough.
Yeah, a lot of tension there.
Ooh, so that's kind of where people get, and I really get the impression that Maui is the developer's least favorite island to build on. So they've succeeded in a way, right? Look what's happened to Oahu since the 60s and 70s.
Right, and that's the concern that the residents have is they don't want to turn into another Oahu.
That's it right there.
But Maui is also at a turning point because the sugar industry has basically folded, and you've got all this A and B land, and there are folks that are looking and turning the stone over, and okay, what should we do? How do we carve this out? Where do we go forward?
Mm-hmm. It's really interesting because, as you know, there are some community groups and individuals and families on that island looking to provide different visions for Maui with their parcels. Bagoyo says he thinks the county might have lost its last opportunity to buy a large parcel and develop it. He's working in sort of infill lands, parcels here and there. And, it's really hard to see, Catherine, how affordable housing can be built without a little more government help, especially those for 50% and below the area median income. And I know Maui is now the county council studying how to develop and implement an affordable housing plan. Maybe the county might be able to help with pre-development costs, like somehow make it easier for developers on the front end so that their investment in the planning won't have to be as much. But
I know that with this whole housing crisis, it just exacerbated with the whole vacation rental issue. And I know Maui and Kauai, large whole homes are being turned over for vacation rentals. And then there goes the housing for the local people.
Mm-hmm. And, there always is the question, how easy do you want to make it for developers?
And I'm always struck when I go over there is when you see the traffic and all the hotel workers that drive in to go to the resorts, and it's just mind-boggling. It used to be you go to the neighbor islands because there was no traffic, and that's not the case anymore. I think any island you go to, you're going to run into a traffic jam at some point.
At certain times of day. But you know what? I must say, we get slammed for traffic here on Oahu, and I find ways around it. You got to know the island. Like the locals know how they can get around a lot of stuff. But traffic and environmental concerns are two of the big things that communities worry about when they have new developments coming in.
Right. And, of course, housing, the biggie.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Noe Tuanikawa, for joining us this morning.
Thanks to you.